Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it.
Welcome back.
Now, before I went to IETF 126, which is one of the bigger standards development meetings, I wrote that technical standards were never outside of politics. And I still believe that, and more strongly now than ever, probably, unfortunately. That earlier post was about the discomfort people feel when the word political gets anywhere near technical standards, right? Standards people often prefer to think of the work as cleanly technical. It's about protocols, interfaces, formats, registries, security properties, and deployment guidance. And all of that is very serious and very precise and kind of safely outside the messier world of national interests, regulatory pressure, economic leverage, and institutional power. Except, of course, it never really was. Technical standards encode assumptions about who can connect, who can speak, who can be trusted, who can be observed, who can be excluded, and who gets priority when values collide. That does not make standards work partisan, but it does mean the work has political consequences. Now, I knew that before Vienna, but what I came home with was something that made me less happy, and that's recognizing that when nation-state politics do enter the room in a standards setting, individual contributors have very little power. Now, that's not a particularly comfortable realization for someone who believes in showing up, doing the work, reading the drafts, making careful comments, and helping improve the output. Standards work depends on people believing that participation matters, that you come in and review, you object, you propose texts, you listen, you compromise, you try again, you hope that good technical reasoning, persistence, and shared norms can keep the work pointed in a constructive direction. Most of the time, that's true, and that work still, that still works well enough to be considered worth doing. But sometimes the forces shaping the conversation are much larger than the people in the room. The internet is not a quiet research network anymore, and it hasn't been for decades. Today, it's critical infrastructure, it's economic infrastructure, it's social infrastructure, it's surveillance infrastructure, it's public safety infrastructure, it's military relevant infrastructure, and a major service for both individual freedom and institutional control. Every government has noticed this. Every major platform has noticed this. Every regulator, every bad actor, they've all noticed. Honestly, they'd have to be asleep not to notice, right? So when we talk about openness and neutrality and privacy and security and interoperability, we're not talking about abstract architectural virtues. We're talking about live conflicts among governments, companies, communities, and individuals with very different ideas about what the internet is for. And that kind of changes the emotional texture of standards work. It's one thing to argue over a protocol mechanism because people disagree about deployment complexity or security properties. It's another thing to realize that a proposal may be part of a much larger pattern, more control at choke points, more regional divergence, more pressure for traceability, more assumptions that every interaction should be attributable to a legally recognized actor, or, that you have more willingness to compromise global interoperability in the name of local policy goals, right? Sometimes the proposal in front of you at these meetings is perfectly reasonable on its own terms, and that's kind of what makes it so tricky. Very few changes arrive wearing a sign that says, "Hello, I am here to help fragment the internet." Instead, they arrive as very practical accommodations. There's some local requirements need to be taken into consideration. There's some compliance hooks, deployment realities, optional metadata, a small extension, a reasonable exception, a way to make the technology usable in one jurisdiction, one sector, one regulatory environment, or one procurement context. And yep, sometimes those accommodations are necessary, which is what makes this so hard. The world has woken up to how powerful the internet is. It's also woken up to how dangerous it can be. You've got fraud, exploitation, surveillance, abuse, disinformation, market concentration, child safety, national security, cyber conflict, platform accountability, right? All of these are hot topics in the news. They are not imaginary problems invented by people who just hate packets, right? They're real. A standards community that dismisses these concerns as someone else's problems will become irrelevant. Possibly worse, it will deserve to become irrelevant. But a standards community that simply absorbs every political demand into technical architecture without examining the consequences will also fail. It may produce specifications, but it will not preserve the properties that made the internet worth standardizing in the first place. And that's the balance that I'm personally struggling with in my work across various standards community. I mean, seriously, what can one person do to help maintain a decent balance between openness and neutrality on one side and the demands of a world that now understands the promise and the danger of the internet on the other? There's a few tempting answers here, right? One is to pick a single value and defend it vigorously. That value may be privacy or openness or end-to-end security or user agency, global interoperability. It's, you know, pick your hill and stand there. And there's some dignity in that, and sometimes it's necessary. Standards work needs people who will say no, especially when everyone else is tired and the room is trying to convince itself that the convenient compromise is harmless. But there's a danger, too. If you only defend one shoreline while the tides are changing everywhere else, you may end up on a shrinking island, still technically correct, still morally satisfied, still increasingly relevant to the systems people are actually building. So another answer is to stay broadly aware and keep pointing out patterns. And that's usually where I find myself. I watch different standards efforts, regulatory pressures, browsers, decisions, identity systems, and so on. And I try and notice when the same assumption appears in multiple places, or when a small design choice in one area starts to run with a larger shift somewhere else. It can be useful, at least I hope it is, but it can also kind of make you sound a little bit like Chicken Little with a data tracker account. You know, crying panic left and right. Not every pattern is a plot, right? Not every proposal is a threat. Not every uncomfortable idea is evidence that the sky is falling. If you warn about everything, people will eventually stop hearing you, even when the warning is justified. So the third option is, of course, to opt out entirely, move off the grid, build a bunker, learn to grow potatoes, possibly learn Chinese, depending on which geopolitical forecast is making the rounds this week. And that has a certain emotional appeal after a long meeting, but it is not, however, a strategy. So I'm less with the boring answer. Participate thoughtfully. Sounds small? Ultimately, it may be small, but it's not nothing. It's not giving up on the process. Participating thoughtfully means resisting the urge to sort proposals entirely by who submits them. Provenance matters and incentives matters. Geopolitical context matters. But a bad actor can make a technically valid observation, and a trusted actor can make a proposal with terrible implications. If we only evaluate ideas by the badge in the room, we will miss both risks. So we have to read proposals for what they enable, not only what they claim to solve, right? What assumptions does this design make about identity or authority, jurisdiction, consent, observability, or control? Who benefits if this becomes infrastructure? Who loses optionality? What becomes easier to mandate later, and what becomes harder to protect? Is this mechanism that appears neutral in the abstract still neutral under predictable deployment pressure? Right? Optional features do not always stay optional. Metadata fields do not always remain harmless, and local accommodations do not always remain local. Compliance hooks have a way of becoming architectural expectations. So participating thoughtfully also means distinguishing between legitimate policy needs and architectural overreach. Governments do have responsibilities. I mean, of course they do. Platforms have responsibilities too. Users do experience real harms, but not every problem should be solved by weakening the technical properties that protect everyone else. Openness, neutrality, privacy, security, interoperability, and user agency, they're not vibes. They are design constraints. They need to be translated into specific technical questions, specific review comments, and specific proposed text. But not everyone will see the same patterns for when we drift from technical properties into overreach. And that's not actually a failure, right? Sometimes the contribution is simply putting the pattern into the room so others can test it, challenge it, refine it, or remember it later when the third, quote-unquote, unrelated proposal starts to look less unrelated. The whole point of having a diverse set of people in the room is to get those different perspectives, because no one can track everything. No one can defend every principle in every venue. The internet is too large, the standards ecosystem is too distributed, and the meetings are too numerous. Pretending otherwise is pretty a fast path to burnout and possibly unpleasant behavior on mailing lists. We have all seen that happen. So our work has to become more disciplined, and that means picking the areas to focus on, staying connected to others so that you have a community to work with, building enough context to recognize when something is a part of a larger shift, and perhaps most importantly, it means being willing to say, I may be wrong, but I think this has implications beyond this document. Then doing the more difficult thing, explaining those implications in terms the working group can actually use. I wish there was a more heroic answer, but at the end of the day, most standards work isn't actually heroic. It's cumulative. It's slow, it's procedural, and it's frequently very irritating. It is 1,000 small acts of review, clarification, objection, compromise, and memory. It is noticing that a term is overloaded, someone asking who the relying party is, someone pointing out that the privacy considerations assume away the most likely deployment model, someone saying, again, that the user is a constituency, not a resource. That work doesn't stop nation-state politics, but it can change what gets normalized. It can make the harmful assumptions visible before they harden into infrastructure. It can preserve the room for better implementations. It can force trade-offs to be named. It can keep global interoperability from being casually sacrificed, right? It can remind a room full of tired experts that technical elegance is not the only measure of success. And I think that's what meaningful contribution looks like. Meaningful contribution is not winning every argument, nor is it pretending that a well-written issue comment can rebalance global power, but it is showing up with enough context, enough humility, and enough stubbornness to keep asking what kind of internet this proposal helps create. Might not feel like much when you're in the middle of it, and goodness knows I had some serious conversations with myself about whether participation is still worth it. But giving up would concede the work to the people who are least troubled by the consequences. And that is not something I think we should be ready to do.
And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.